Our text for preaching the good news, and the good news comes to us this morning from Luke's gospel, Luke's unique account, a story that is unique to Luke's account of Easter day. So I invite you to listen for God's living word to you this day in this story and in the words that follow. Now on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him." Then he said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory? Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it is almost evening, and the day is now nearly over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed it, broke it, gave it to them, and their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?' That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon.' Then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread." The word of God for the people of God. Let's say you've just been resurrected. What's the first thing you would do? Where would you appear? Whom would you be sure to visit right away? Given the shocking defeat Jesus suffered just 3 days before this scene, the violent assault that left him dead and buried, you might think he would now head straight back to the capital, right? He's been humiliated, broken, literally buried, sealed in a tomb. If this were an ordinary story, wouldn't you think he'd want vindication? Wouldn't you? You guys think you're done with me? You think power and violence have the last word in this story, in my story, in your story? Think again, because I'm back, and I am fresh from the tomb, and you have never seen anything like me before. It's easy to imagine that, but that's just not who Jesus is. He played by different rules before his crucifixion, preferring the towel of a servant to the trappings of power, preferring the reins of a donkey to the reins of a chariot. For his whole life, he has always opted for the way of peace and nonviolence. And evidently, resurrection has not changed any of that. Because instead of heading back to the capital to confront the palace elites, to have a not-so-quiet word with the leaders of the temple, he takes a different tack. He appears as a stranger to two other strangers, two marginal characters we've never met before, traveling back to their little village on some dusty back road. Now, on one hand, this remote appearance to two travelers of little consequence is entirely in keeping with the Jesus we've come to know in the preceding pages, the Jesus who privileges the powerless, who loves the people on the margins and gives them pride of place in his ministry and his story. That he appears out of nowhere to two nobodies on their way to nowhere of any consequence, this itself is not so surprising. But the story is about to take a turn that is surprising, one that brings it a great deal closer to the lives we know, closer to the lives we live. When Jesus asks the travelers what they're talking about as they trudge along, Luke tells us they stood still, looking sad. This is exceedingly odd. Let's remember, this is an Easter story. The travelers are heading back to Emmaus not on that terrible Friday when the sky turned black and their Messiah died. They're heading back on Sunday, that same day, the text says. The same day the earth shook and the stone was rolled away. The same day incarnate love burst out of that tomb like a nova being born. That same day. And yet they stood still, looking sad. It's not that their timing was bad. That is, it's not that they left town early, just missing the women who were returning from the tomb, joyfully proclaiming the news that would change not only their lives, but news that would literally change the world. They, these two travelers, they have heard this news. And still they're walking away, heading home. Sadness washing over them in waves. Why is this? Well, Luke gives us at least some insight into their skepticism, into their sadness. One of the travelers, Cleopas, has the courage, the only place he's named in all of the scriptures, Cleopas has the courage to confess what's really going on. We had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Evidently, these two pilgrims were caught up in the future tense, that is, an imaginary future. When the Messiah comes, he will redeem Israel. Like Moses, he will set God's people free. That's the future they want, but that is not the future they get. And so, as Richard Swanson, professor of religion at Augustana College, has pointed out, they're forced instead, these two travelers, to contemplate life in the imperfect tense, not the future tense, the imperfect tense. We had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. We had hoped things would be different. I think it's a safe bet that every one of us in this room today knows what the imperfect tense feels like. We had hoped that the pain in our joints was just because we're getting a little older, not because we have a high white count in our blood cells that's going to require treatment that will cause our hair to fall out and our life to change. We had hoped that our campaigning and our canvassing and our organizing to end racism, to protect the environment, to make our rivers cleaner and our air safer, to make our country more welcoming to strangers and refugees. We had hoped these efforts would succeed, that we could help make America kinder again. But now we're faced with a future no one predicted and that we are not prepared for. We had hoped that the judge would see the facts of the case differently, would see them the way we do. But now we're faced with the loss of our business, and the loss of the future we had planned on and depended on. The hard truth is that the imperfect tense, we had hoped things might be different. This is familiar to all of us. Which leads us back to the truth of this story. Resurrection doesn't come easily, nor does believing in it. In comic books and movies, superheroes sustain mortal wounds and get right back up. But that's not the story we have. It took Jesus 3 days and a trip to the tomb to rise again. These travelers have heard the astounding news of his rising. They are talking about that very thing when he appears among them. The risen Christ is standing next to them. Yet when he asks what they're discussing, they stood still, looking sad. Resurrection doesn't come easily. It didn't for Jesus, and sometimes it doesn't for those of us who follow him. A few years ago, Cheryl Strayed published a memoir about the journey she took to find hope again after her mother died. Like the travelers in today's story, she had hoped for a different future, one in which cancer did not steal her mother away when Cheryl was but 22, one in which her marriage did not crumble under the weight of the grief she was feeling, one in which she was happy in the present and her future made sense. But that was not the future she got. Her book, Wild, From Lost to Found on the Pacific Crest Trail, documents her effort to come to terms with life in the imperfect tense. She had hoped for a different future, one in which her mom became a grandmother to her children and was always there when she herself needed comfort and counsel. She had hoped for that future. And now she was going off on a journey to try to come to terms with a different one, with her new present reality. The book became almost an overnight sensation, resonating with thousands of readers for as many different reasons as there are readers, because they, too, had lost a loved one far too early and found comfort in Cheryl's story, because they, too, had watched as the rock they'd built their life upon, their marriage, their job, their health, their faith. They watched as that rock crumbled far too early, and they found hope in Cheryl's story. If you read her book or saw the hit movie that followed it a couple years later, then you know Cheryl's story well. And it may have helped you find hope or comfort or renewed your faith in God or in the future. What you might not know is that before Cheryl Strayed published her memoir, published Wild, she was the author of a highly popular online advice column. That's how she got her start, really. And you might not know this about her because the column was not called Dear Cheryl. It was called Dear Sugar. Not sure why. I shared this story from one of her columns, Dear Sugar columns, a few years ago from this pulpit, but I think it bears repeating now. One of her readers wrote to her from the pediatric ICU at Eagleson Children's Hospital at Emory University in Atlanta. Her six-month-old daughter was found to have had a brain tumor, and the surgery was scheduled for the next day. The mom writes, "People have poured all their thoughts and prayers into us right now, but to be honest, God is the furthest thing from my mind. I've never been super religious, but now I find myself doubting God's existence more than ever. If there were a God, why would he let my little girl have to have possibly life-threatening surgery?" You can hear the imperfect tense right below the surface. We had hoped our baby girl would be healthy and a healthy and happy child. We had hoped we'd never find ourselves in the pediatric ICU, so scared and anxious we are sweating blood. They had hoped for a carefree future, but that's not the future they got. Cheryl herself confessed that she was reluctant to address the mom's concerns, not because they weren't worthy of a reply. These were issues literally about life and death, and the woman's questions about the existence of God were shared by many of Cheryl's readers. She knew this from the letters she'd gotten from them. Rather, she was reluctant for a simpler reason. "I don't know squat about God," she confessed. Nevertheless, she persisted. Cheryl writes, "It is no surprise you have such doubt in the moment of crisis, sweet pea. it's perfectly natural that you will feel angry and scared and betrayed by a God who you want to believe will take mercy on you by protecting those dearest to you. When I learned my mom was going to die of cancer at the age of 45, I felt the same way. She wanted what she wanted, and she expected it to be given to her by a God she didn't even believe in. But again, life didn't work out that way for Cheryl's mom. Her future tense turned into imperfect tense. And it didn't work out that way for Cheryl either, which is in large part why this agnostic advice columnist shared this observation with another woman who was herself tormented by doubt and anxiety. The other half of rising is first being nailed to the cross. This is a truth I'm confident myself that every single one of us has or will experience at some point. Cheryl continues, what you learned as you sat in her response to the woman, what you learned as you sat bedside with your daughter in the ICU is that your idea of God as a possibly non-existent spirit man who may or may not hear your prayers and may or may not swoop in to save your tail when the going gets rough is a losing prospect. So it's up to you to create a better one, a bigger one, which is really almost always something smaller. What if you allowed your God to exist in the simple words of compassion others offer to you? What if faith is the way it feels? What if faith is the way it feels to lay your hand on your daughter's sacred body? That's a pretty fair description of what happens right here in church when we offer each other a hug of peace. When we allow God to exist in simple words of compassion others offer to us. Except our story doesn't stop there. Because the story of Easter, the story of Christ's rising, this is our story. Even if it's hard to believe, even if it comes slowly, even if we find ourselves trapped at times in a dark tomb, we are people who believe in resurrection. And because of this, our lives are not defined by the imperfect tense. Rather, we live squarely in the present tense, in the here and now, believing that even in times of doubt, the risen Christ will come near to us, will join us on our journey, and that we will experience him not just when our faith is at its peak, when life is easy and we know everything will be okay, we know nothing but joy. We travelers, we sojourners, will experience God's presence even in our questions, even when life is hard, even when we find ourselves buried by doubt or sorrow or sadness. We too will rise again because this is our story and we are Easter people.